Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Scottie Scheffler adds gold to his green jackets. The United States has won another gold medal here in Paris. Scottie Scheffler is an Olympic champion.
The Olympic golf, it was good, the final round there. Scheffler, everybody but Schauffele. Schauffele had a terrible final round. You know, in the final pairing, he wasn't even close.
73, yeah. I think yesterday.
Really tough day for Xander Schauffele, who's won two majors this year. To the Western Hotline for Brian Koziol. Little on the golf chatter on the Olympics, on Scheffler's gold. Brian, our host, one of our hosts of Tee to Green, of course. And Brian, it was good golf on Sunday. It was, and maybe Scottie Scheffler being in it and being at the top of the leaderboard and ultimately winning it. I mentioned this to Joe in the first hour. That's probably good for the Olympics and good for the status of the gold medal, is that the guy that won it is the best.
It really was great golf. And you had, you know, some of the best in the world going at it. And Scheffler's been probably as good as anybody this year, if not best. And for him to shoot a 62, 9 under par, and really go and win it, I think that validates it. I mean, now golf being back in the Olympics, it was gone for 100 years. The last three summer Olympics, we've had Justin Rose, Xander Schauffele, and Scottie Scheffler win. So that really, you know, I think makes it look big time. And then even the three winners, Scheffler, Fleetwood, Matsuyama, you know, representing, it's a nice global golf representation there with the United States, Great Britain, and Japan. So, yeah, I agree with you. It made it feel like a big-time event for sure.
You know, as we talked about it through the week, and people wondered, would it be considered on the level of a major? I mean, it's obviously a great accomplishment, and you could see how much it meant to Scheffler. The way that I might want to answer the question that the Olympic gold, is it equal to a major, would be if Tommy Fleetwood had won it. Because Fleetwood's a guy that's very popular among players, fans, and he's still looking for his first major. Had he won the gold, it would have been nice. I don't know, Brian, would it have felt like he had finally gotten there, or would he still, of course, have to tackle that, hasn't won a major?
Yeah, I mean, Fleetwood has won events around the world, but he's actually, this is what's incredible, he's been so good, he's never actually won a PGA Tour event. Now, this part of the PGA Tour had their hand in bringing the Olympics back, but they don't officially run this, obviously the IOC does. Fleetwood still maybe looking for what would be considered for him a monster win. He's been so good at the Ryder Cup. We know that, you know, just in terms of being a consistently very good player, he's very popular, very well liked. This would have definitely been his biggest win for sure, by far. For Scheffler, you know, he just adds to a resume of the best golf season since 2000 when Tiger won 9 times. This is just, obviously, there wasn't an Olympics back for when Tiger played. But for Scheffler, this kind of validates him having an outstanding year. I was hearing some discussion yesterday, too, about still like PGA Tour Player of the Year, Schauffele winning 2 of the 4 majors versus Scheffler now. I mean, depending upon how you want to count the Olympics, this is, you know, this would be the 7th big event that Scheffler won. I'm at least willing to say now he's won 7 big time events because this field was so strong. So, you know, for him, I think unless Xander Schauffele, like, you know, goes through the FedEx Cup playoffs and wins maybe like 2 of the 3 and he wins the overall title, I think Scheffler is probably a shoe-in for the Player of the Year award. But for Fleetwood, he said this is, you know, the biggest moment of his career so far, winning a silver medal. It meant quite a bit for him. Matsuyama, we know, got such a huge uplift in his life and icon status in Japan when he won the Masters. And, you know, now to get a medal, the first medal forever in golf for Japan, I'm sure he'll, you know, only add to that list.
The collapse, Brian, by Rahm on the back nine with the lead, his day yesterday, how you took it in, and then also, like, is he might be the poster child right now, I feel like, for a guy that went to live.
And is mad about it.
And is mad about it, slash fallen off. Like, because he didn't really, and anything we saw him in, like majors and then the Olympics, I feel like he didn't have a great year, at least to my eyes.
He used to always, you know, also this, Brian, he used to play mad, and then was trying to ditch that and not play as mad. And now it looks like he just plays mad all the time again.
Last week, he finally got his first win on the LIV Tour, and he wasn't really even happy about it because I think you're right. I think he's still in some there's still a big piece of him that regrets going to LIV. Because how did he win last week? Well, he won because Tyrrell Hatton missed a putt on the last hole. Well, you know, in LIV they have teams. Well, Hatton's on his team. Their team won, and they're supposed to, you know, they're sitting there doing the traditional LIV, you know, throw the champagne all over the place bottles, and he's supposed to be doing it with Hatton, who is disappointed that he missed the putt to win. And, you know, Rahm's sitting there saying, oh, this win is bittersweet because one of my best friends and my teammate here missed the putt. So even when he finally gets his first win on the LIV Tour, he seemed kind of bothered by the format setup. He's hated the fact that, you know, there's drones all over. He hates the fact that there's music. He's been bothering him. You're right. He's played mad. That's kind of been one of his trademarks through his career, is that he's got that feistiness, that edge to him. But in some sense, I feel like, you know, people have found that that has been likable in some sense. He was just dominating and running away with it. I think he was up by 4 at one point in the middle of the round. Then he had a double, which brought him back. And then to finish bogey, not only did he lose, but that finish took him out of getting a medal. That's extra sting. And I think that's what made this kind of fun. I know that it's still 60 for 3 spots. I know that doesn't sound great. I know it's still just a normal setup in terms of a 4-round tournament. But yesterday, I mean, in an event like this, it was great. But normally it's still, you know, somebody is the winner. But because silver and bronze were still in play, you felt like there was like a dozen guys that at one point were still in there. McIlroy was 1 off the lead with 4 to go until he threw one into the water. Victor Perez, who is playing for France, who's got the entire gallery behind him, is throwing up a 63 and somehow trying to maybe make a miracle run here. Tom Kim was in it almost to the end. He's got the side story with maybe having to serve 2 years Korean military service. He can get out of it if he somehow medals. Like, there was all these sort of storylines. And then kind of just quietly the whole time, Scheffler's moving up. And then all of a sudden, like, wow, you know, look what the world number one is doing here. And suddenly he's tied for the lead.
Yeah,
it was pretty good stuff and a lot of storylines with a lot of good players.
What is that Tom Kim storyline?
He might have to have mandatory military service.
And he would have been able to get out of it had he meddled?
Yes, so the Korean government requires all males that are, I guess, you know, physically able to serve in the military, I think before the age of 35, for 2 years. Now, there's been some pretty good golfers that have done this in the past and then kind of go away. and then, you know, maybe have not come back and played their best golf. But basically, he was really, really emotionally distraught in the sense of knowing, like, kind of what this could mean for his golf career. He turned pro at 15. So, I mean, this guy obviously, you know, he's been around pro golf, but this year he really, really took the stage. But for him, if had he medaled, he could have gotten out of that 2-year military service. Him and Ben Ahn, who's Ahn, by the way, this is almost his last chance. He's 32 years old, and, you know, by the age of 35, he had to do that. So that was something that I'm sure was on the mind of both of them. What happened with Siwoo Kim and Sungjae Im, they earned an exemption last year. The South Korean team won a gold medal at the Asian Games. That's another spot where if they win a gold there, he could get out of it. But Sangmun Bae, a player from a few years ago, maybe the most like well-known example of this, he played one on the PGA Tour. Then he went to serve in the military. And then basically after returning to golf, his performance was not even close. He said, look, you know, I don't get to play golf. I don't get to practice or play for like a year and a half. He said it's super hard to keep your game up at that level. So Kim is still 22, so he has some time. He's got maybe another couple of Asian games and maybe at least one more Olympics to try to do this. But at some point, based upon just being a Korean citizen, that's something that maybe he'll have to face at some point. So that was another layer to it. I know Scottie Scheffler and Tom Kim are really, really good friends, and they were playing together. And Scheffler was asked about that, and he said like he knew how that was weighing on Tom Kim, who was within a shot or two of being in that medal area, and then he fell off right at the end there. I think that had to have been a really, really emotional day for Tom Kim, thinking that that was maybe this could be life-changing for a variety of reasons, including maybe avoiding a 2-year military service stint that he would have had to have done.
Get to the NFL Top 100 in a moment, but wrapping up with Brian Koziol, host of Tee to Green, on the Olympics and on golf from here. So, Brian, we're getting close to the FedEx, right? Like, the schedule is the Wyndham Championship this week, and then the 3 weeks of the FedEx?
That's correct. So this week is the final week of the regular season upcoming. You said it, Wyndham Championship in Greensboro, North Carolina. So there'll be a lot of jockeying for position. If you remember last year going into this week, Justin Thomas was like a huge name on the outside of the FedEx Cup point. He had had a bad year. He was outside of the top 70. They adjusted the playoff a couple of years ago. It used to be the top 125. Now it's just the top 70. And it used to be 4 events. It's down to 3 now. So only the top 70 in terms of points actually get in, and you know there's going to be some decent names that may be trying to get in. Now I just mentioned Victor Perez from France, who has had a good year and obviously, you know, was a crowd favorite. He's sitting this week at 71st going into the week, so there'll be some, you know, some guys here that are trying to play to get himself in to that top 70. And then Jordan Spieth, he's sitting at 63rd, so we'll have to keep an eye on him this week. He's had an up and down. Victor Hovland, by the way, 55th. So there are some names that, depending upon how this plays out this week, they could be on the outside looking in. So you will see maybe some bigger names playing than what normally would be an event that for them maybe wouldn't matter. And then it goes into the 3-week playoff after that. Starts with the FedEx St. Jude, then the BMW Championship, and then the Tour Championship. And they cut it from there. I believe it goes from 70 to 50 to 30 over those 3 events. And then playing for the huge $15 million prize at the end.
Brian Koziol. Thanks, Brian.
Okay, guys. Have a great Monday. Thanks.
Host of Tee to Green. You can hear them on the weekends as, you know, we get through the golf season and get towards the FedEx playoffs. Okay. The NFL Top 100. Question for you.
Okay. These came out on Friday?
Yeah. Did you have Tyreek Hill going number one?
I did not.
Tyreek Hill, no. The number one player on the NFL Top 100.
I also don't want to say I'm like stunned by it. I wouldn't have bet him to be number one and probably would have bet 5 other guys that we knew about that were going to be in the top 10, but it's not the most stunning thing in the world.
Is the most stunning thing Lamar above Mahomes?
I think that's more stunning.
Lamar Jackson's number 2.
I think that's more stunning.
Christian McCaffrey is number 3.
Yeah.
And Mahomes is number 4.
Right.
On Mahomes, this is worth pointing out. For Bills fans that get up in arms and really upset about Josh Allen's ranking in the NFL Top 100, Mahomes has been ranked outside of number one quite a bit, actually. In fact, he's been, when he won the MVP in 2019, it was the fourth ranked player.
Okay.
He won the Super Bowl in 2020 and was fourth. In 2022, they lost the Super Bowl to Tampa, and he was eighth.
Mm-hmm.
So Mahomes has been dancing around fourth, eighth,
mm-hmm.
and here he is fourth again, right?
Yeah.
The question I would have about this, I think the NFL Top 100 actually means something to the players because it's the players that pick it. There's a Bears cornerback, Jalen Johnson. Really good corner, really good player. He was a former future Bill back at the trade deadline last year,
yes.
when we were thinking, hey, go trade for Jalen Johnson. They end up trading for Rasul Douglas. He said it's BS that he's not on the top 100. And Madden ratings are one thing. If you're a player and the Madden ratings come out, who are you mad at? Video game developers.
Yeah.
People who you don't know who they are. What do you mean I'm a 77 awareness? Whatever. This is different. Mm-hmm. This is the players rank the players. And here's the list. Tyreek Hill number one, Lamar number two. For Lamar to be number two is a function of what? He won the MVP in a year when plenty of people think he didn't have an MVP caliber season. But you have Mahomes as quarterback two and Allen as quarterback three. This is a ranking, Joe, that had Tua above Burrow.
Yeah. Yep.
So does anybody have a reaction to it that's different than just, oh, my guy got screwed? Because it feels like all these rankings and all of ranking season exist to yell about how your favorite player got snubbed, whoever that even is. Because when it's the players, I don't want to tell them they got it wrong while also acknowledging I might feel that the rankings are not how I would rank them. I mean, yeah. I think Tyreek Hill number one is absolutely fair. He is one of the players in the league that you have to account for on every play. He doesn't play quarterback. So for positional rankings, you know, like in a super draft, he's not going number one. We're not starting a dynasty with Tyreek Hill because he's old.
Mm-hmm.
But if the players say he's the best player in the league, my thought is, okay.
Yeah.
That's fine. Aaron Donald has gotten it before, right? Number one.
Yep.
Is there anything wrong with Tyreek Hill being ranked the number one player?
I don't think there's anything wrong with it at all, given that that's the parameters of the list. There's a million examples of they're trying to take out the positional value as best as possible and just tell you who's the best at what they do in the league. And I can get there with Tyreek Hill on that. Even saying that, like, we follow a team here that has done as well a job at shutting him down as anybody. Not in the playoffs. But in the regular season, like, he hasn't, I don't think, top 75 yards against Sean McDermott. But we see it on a weekly basis. He's a freak. The speed that he has, I feel like he's as unique a superstar receiver as we've seen, because he can move like very few and maybe no one we've ever seen. I don't even know how offensive it is that Jackson is above Mahomes. What, do we know when they voted on this?
It's regular season,
because
would be my guess.
If that's the case, anyone want to tell me why last regular season? Like, again, like, how are these players being asked? Hey, tell me who the best players are right now. And if in the moment you're in the playoffs, or the playoffs haven't even started yet, or whenever they're being asked, Mahomes' regular season last year was not on a Mahomes standard.
That's right.
Jackson won MVP. Do you know where Mahomes finished in MVP last year? He finished fourth in NFL Top 100. You want to know where he finished in the MVP voting? He finished seventh. He finished behind Allen. He finished behind Purdy. He finished behind McCaffrey. He finished behind Tyreek Hill. Do you want to know where he finished in interceptions last year? Because he was fourth. Quarterback rating, he was 15th. Passing touchdowns, he was seventh. He wasn't number one in anything. He wasn't number one in yards. He wasn't number one in yards per attempt. Like, his statistical season, there's a good excuse for that, is his receivers probably stunk.
Yeah, he didn't have a great year. Their offense had a bad year, and
but
they won the Super Bowl, and he said it was a bad year.
But find me the area. You can even include the playoffs if you want. Find me the area in an individual basis last year where Patrick Mahomes was the best quarterback in football. He won the Super Bowl. I know he did. His defense had a great run, and he had a couple of moments when he needed to have them. But on the broad scope of the 2023 season, anyone want to show me a number or a stretch of games where he was the best quarterback in football? Because I feel like you're going to have a hard time finding it.
Yeah.
Other than, oh, well, he's won three rings. And he should get credit for that. I'm not saying he shouldn't, but if the list is designed around who was the best last season, he wasn't the best. There's one split. I'm getting real specific in this. When it came to like throws 20 plus yards down the field, he was one of the worst in football last year. Again, that might be a receiver thing. How often were guys open down the field for him? I don't know. But I don't think it's that offensive. I don't know that I would have done it, but I don't think it's even that offensive that Jackson was above him. Is it that bad?
Right, because when we think about ranking players, we think about where they are in their career, what they've accomplished, what it means, rather than who just had the best
yes.
year.
Right. And I think his season will get forgotten because he won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, Mahomes had a year where he had 14 picks, which was fourth, and only 27 touchdowns. He had a year where he went down 1,100 yards from the year before. He went from 5,200 yards to 4,100. Like, it wasn't a Mahomes statistical monster season that we've grown accustomed to. It was a really good year for a really good quarterback who had a great defense. And again, in some big moments, he showed up like you'd expect, and he won the Super Bowl. It wasn't, oh, he threw 50 touchdowns and lit the world on fire, and you can't believe the video game numbers that he put up.
It's funny you mentioned that Chiefs team and what they did. I saw Warren Sharp tweeting stats about MVS. We'll get Sal coming up next segment to talk about MVS because he's with the Bills now, right? Like, all right.
Yep.
And some of the numbers that Warren Sharp had on MVS. So there's a highlight yesterday from Marquez Valdes-Scantling dropping two passes during quarterback receiver drills.
Okay.
Alex Brasky tweeted this out. And he's not being covered. He's just dropping passes at training camp.
Okay.
Which, is that problematic? Yeah, probably. In a receiver room that's going to be battling for those bottom spots. Warren Sharp pointed out 43 receivers in the last 2 years have run 900 routes or more. Where does MVS rank in those receivers? Okay, 900 routes. That means you're playing.
Yeah. You're on the field.
Guys that have played in the last 2 years, MVS was number 42 of 43 in wide receiver error rate per route.
Okay.
42 of 43 in catch rate.
Okay.
40 of 43 in accurate target catch rate. 40 of 43 in success rate. 39 of 43 in EPA per target while playing with mm-hmm. Patrick Mahomes.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's kind of scary.
That's pretty scary.
That's scary.
That's where the Bills are right now. Maybe he's not going to make the roster. I don't know if the Bills will.
I'm really wondering that right now.
Shouldn't you be terrified that he does?
That he makes it?
Yeah.
A little bit. I don't know what he does for me.
The only way he makes the roster, it seems, is if they really value that he has experience. But his experience is consistently being bad, actively hurting his teams. I thought when they brought in MVS, it made sense because he's the only guy on the market that could play that speed X that you might want. But he might not even make it on the team.
Yeah.
42, 42, 40, 40, and 39 out of 43 receivers in every metric you could manage of how good is this guy at contributing to your offense? The answer is he doesn't.
Here you go. This can kind of pull together the Mahomes conversation and even MVS a little bit. So this is I mentioned Mahomes had some of the worst numbers, 20-plus yards down the field. What is MVS's job?
To catch the ball 20 yards down the field.
That is his job on every team he's ever been. He's a vertical, deep threat from the day he entered football. He does not do a lot else for you well. That's what he was on the Packers and then the Chiefs. And he was the deep threat on the Chiefs last year. And what were Mahomes' numbers? In completion percentage, 20-plus yards down the field, 24 quarterbacks played half their team snaps last year. Where did Mahomes rank? 23rd. Who was worse than him? Bryce Young. That's it. Where did he rank in yards per attempt? Yards per attempt, 20-plus yards down the field. Patrick Mahomes, out of those 24, ranked 22nd. Only quarterbacks worse, Bryce Young and Sam Howell. So he was the deep threat. Mahomes was one of the worst deep ball passers in football last year. And I'm not putting that on him. I'm putting that on the position and maybe some defenses figuring some things out too, but that's a warning sign right there. If he couldn't catch the ball down the field with Patrick Mahomes last year, with all the routes available to him because the receiver room was wide open, like, what, how much better should I expect that to go for him here if he's on the team? I'm going to think he's going to catch, what, 10 of those?
Yeah.
With Allen? I just I don't know.
It's funny, like, we all think about 13 seconds as you have the Chiefs where you want them. Last year, the injuries, of course, for the Bills are a factor here. But as you lay that all out, the Chiefs were on the road, finally, and a much worse version of their offense than they'd ever been. Their defense, of course, is great. Like, that's what got them through having such a bad offense.
It's maddening they won the Super Bowl.
It kind of makes you feel like, man, that was a year that somebody was supposed to beat them.
How did they not?
Not just the Bills, but the Ravens, the Niners, they all feel this way. Like, how could nobody have taken them out last year? They were right there for the taking.
It's crazy.
Their offense is one of the worst to win it in the last 10 years.
It really is, yeah. Like,
if not maybe the worst to win it in the last 10 years.
I mean, the Bills, there were things that happened in that game, and it probably was closer than it should have been. But even the Bills were not the best version of themselves. Their weapons let them down in that game. They had linebackers off the street, and they lost by 3. They ran a fake punt that failed in that game and still only lost by 3.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Sal, when we get back, he'll recap the blue and red practice and also yesterday. The Bills were at it yesterday. They're back to it today. Not open to the public today, but, they're back to work. And we'll hear from, I think, Bobby Babich speaking with the media a little bit later today. We'll get Sal to recap and, just preview everything as we go. Stay tuned. Sal Capaccio on Training Camp next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Sal Capaccio is, of course, covering training camp today. Coverage of camp brought to you by Admar Construction, the equipment you need when you need it. Fiegel, Carr, and Joyce, your border attorneys. Buy Outlet Liquor when you need to stock up. It's a place to buy a case. What's your outlet? And buy your Western New York Ford dealers in the all-purpose affordable Ford Bronco Sport. joining us, Mr. Sal Capaccio, to recap the blue and red and also yesterday's practice and get off to today, which is not open to the public. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. First things first, maybe most important. What did you think of Josh Allen's matte black helmet with red standing buffalo? One of our potential ideas was a black setup because lots of teams have just added a black jersey, like the Niners and the Jets and the Cardinals. Like teams that don't have black have added a black set, and Josh Allen goes with matte black helmet.
Well, I like the helmet. I like it much better with a black, you know, jersey or pants even. I like the look of it, but it didn't, to me, quite fit with the red and the white. You know what I mean? So, yeah, you give me the full ensemble, and I'm probably feeling a little bit differently. But, you know, in that setting, it was pretty cool. Remember, who asked me? Somebody. Oh, I was on WBEN on Friday. I honestly had no idea. And they said, what do we expect? Is Josh going to have a new helmet tonight? And what would it look like? I said, I really don't know. I said, but he's had the blue charging buffalo and the red charging buffalo. Maybe we can get something with the standing buffalo. So there you go. He had the standing buffalo. But the black, I wasn't expecting. I like the look of the helmet. I didn't love the look of it with the red and the white. But, of course, they wouldn't have something like that. Give me the full black ensemble like that, and I bet you it would look really, really sharp.
Yeah. Yeah, it might be something they explore in the future as they add a uniform set, because that's just a third jersey, again, that a lot of teams have gone to. So what was the highlight or the headline from the blue and red?
The defense dominated. That was the headline. The defense had a really good day, guys. They picked off Josh Allen a few times, and one was a bad throw. He shouldn't have thrown it. Kyrie Elam did a nice job to read him, peel off his man, and grab the ball. One hit... Curtis Samuel, I think, like right in the chest, and didn't hold on to it. Popped up in the air. I don't even remember if that one was an actual interception or if they just, because in that play, I think maybe even Terrell Bernard got banged up because he collided with somebody. They should have had it. We were going through it a little bit with some of the media people, and I think we put like there was three total. Maybe one you put on Josh. Like it's one of those times where everybody in the offense just was not in sync. They were just not making plays. The defense was flying around. They were making plays, and then on top of that, we get Ray Davis with a long run down the right side, and at the end, bam, gets punched out. That's not the first fumble he's had during training camp. So the defense made plays. I think that's the headline.
Two big runs, Cook and Davis both getting loose. You know, Sal, when it comes to run defense, do you feel like that's one of the harder things to evaluate? Because, I mean, going all out, not tackling to the ground, I mean, to give up those big gashing plays, you know, you said the defense won the day. But to give up big ones on the ground, I'd imagine, is something Bobby Babbage is not happy about.
No, that's right. I agree. But I think that the run defense, I've written about this, has been very good this camp, especially the first unit. But again, it's tough to evaluate, Jeremy, because you're not really tackling, right? And like even when the running back gets there, it's kind of up thud and all that. I think that through this camp, one of the more impressive things in units or parts of the game for the Bills has been their first team run defense. After that, I think the second and third team has not been as good. But I think the first team run defense has been very good this entire camp. And yes, there were a couple at the stadium that got loose. But again, you're not super aggressive tackling, so those are going to happen once in a while.
Yeah.
I just really like when I watch the overview and the kind of the full macro of the play. I think the run defense, since we got out here at camp, has really gotten to the ball very quickly and very well.
It's going to take, you know, stopping the run, Sal, is going to take, obviously, everybody on the field. I'm thinking back to the last couple years, they've been beaten on the ground for big gains, right? Like Dalvin Cook, the 80-yarder, Derrick Henry's done it. And, you know, to stop the big long runs can sometimes come down to how things go in the secondary. And that's where the Bills are banged up. So that's what I ask about is, like, with Mike Edwards, Cole Bishop, with the injuries they have in the secondary, what kind of concern should there be about them starting the season with guys back there, whether it's Hamlin or Taylor Rapp? I mean, Rapp's played that position for them before. But is it about secondary run support that has led to some of the bigger problems?
It can be. It has been. I think also because at times, you know, the Bills run a penetrating style defense up front. And what happens when you penetrate, if you're a defensive tackle and you're flying upfield, well, that allows for a little bit more space. And if, once you get past the first wave, you know, a lot of different things can happen. I also think that, you know, you take Matt Milano out of, you know, the middle of your defense, you know, you're going to have some adjustment there. Not that, you know, I think Tyrell Dodson, we all kind of thought he played pretty well, I think, most of the year last year when he finally came in. But, you know, there's an adjustment when you have those different linebackers. It's about everything. Secondary has to be there. Run defense, run support at the safety spot, at the corner spot has to be there. But to answer your question about like what happens week one, I do wonder, Jeremy, like what does the safety room look like? This is, you know, we have a preseason game coming up this week, right? The Bills are playing the Chicago Bears this week, then Pittsburgh next week, Carolina. You still have some runway here. You still have a little bit of time here. I don't think they're quite in panic mode about, you know, who's playing at safety. But the longer this goes on, you have to start thinking who's actually going to be on the field in those moments. And then, you know, how can other teams take advantage of it? If the Buffalo Bills go into week one, and even if, let's just say, I had this conversation with Matt Bovan. It's always game day in Buffalo. People can check it out. We just did one yesterday. Let's just say you go to week one and Bishop and Edwards are both kind of close, but they're not quite there. And the Bills say, you know what? We got a Thursday night game against Miami the following week. It's a division game. We don't want to put them out there. We want to give those guys one, you know, more kind of just week rest. Well, the Bills then go into week one with Taylor Rapp and DeMar Hamlin. How is everybody feeling? I think there's a lot of, are they going to be able to hold up here? And, you know, while the Bills, I think, themselves have probably a lot of faith in both those guys that know the system and do everything, I think Taylor Rapp, obviously, separately is, okay, he's our guy. But, you know, when you have DeMar Hamlin starting and then what do you have behind those guys, I think there's going to be some concern. But we have a little bit of time at least before that to see if that happens.
Yeah. Last year, Sal, middle linebacker, that kind of happened too, right? And I do wonder, you know, like Bernard, after missing like all of camp and preseason, just, oh, we're going to put you right in, kind of without all that, as the middle linebacker. I mean, that ends up working. Is that kind of a one-time thing? And like, was that circumstantial? He had been here a year already. Like, to me, like, I would wonder, like, okay, Mike Edwards is back on the practice field the week before, you know, week one, and he missed all that time before. Like, would they still think about going to him?
I wonder. I don't know. That's a good question, Joe. I mean, they play the long game here, right? You want to really kind of, you know, make sure that everybody's, you know, in it for the long haul here. And the way the schedule sets up early in the season, you have that Sunday, Thursday, you know, back-to-back right there to start the season. So there's a lot has to be decided. But you know what? Mike Edwards got hurt over a week ago now. He was termed week to week, so who knows? Maybe this week he gets back on the field. I wouldn't expect him to necessarily play this Saturday against the Chicago Bears. We'll find out, by the way, this week what Sean's, you know, thought is on that. We don't know what as far as starters playing or anything like that. But I would imagine even guys like Hamlin and Rapp, because they're the guys playing now, and you can't risk them getting hurt. We may be looking at, you know, some of the really bottom depth safety guys playing most of this game.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline. So today's practice closed to the public, and then two more Wednesday and Thursday before the Bears preseason game. You know, Sal, as we talk about the preseason, we hope to see maybe Caleb Williams for the first time, maybe see Roma Dunze as well,
yeah,
and get a good look at the Bears. Do you have a list of players? This might be something a little further in the week, but I'll just, you know, start the conversation now. Who has the most to gain and lose as the preseason gets started? Like we know a good number of players that are on this team, but the positional battles, what are Bills fans going to be looking for this week through the final few days of camp and then into the preseason?
It's a good question. I haven't really thought about it too hard, Jerry, so let me just do it off the top of my head. If you say to me who has the most to gain, how about a guy like Tyrell Shavers who can really start to solidify a spot? I think Tyrell Shavers is on track to make this team as of right now. The question is it over Marquez Valdes-Scantling? Is it an extra in addition wide receiver? Like, where is he? To me, you got your four, Samuel Coleman, Shakirin Hollins. I think Tyrell Shavers is number five, maybe arguably number five right now. Has he really passed MVS? And then Chase Claypool isn't even on the field, so you can't count him right now. Justin Shorter, Andy Isabella, like, that's the guy right now. So I think to most to gain might be an undrafted free agent from 2 years ago who seems like he is actually on this team as of right now. I'll throw another guy in there. I think Zach Davidson is making a very strong case to be a tight end on this roster. He had another really good day yesterday. I'm not going to go so far as to say he'll be the number two tight end over Dawson Knox. I don't think that. But I think he legitimately is passing Quentin Morris right now for number three. And I could even see a scenario where he's on the field and passing situations in lieu of Knox sometimes, because that's what he does, right? He's not as much of a blocker. Dawson is more of a well-rounded tight end. So this is not necessarily a knock on Dawson. What I'm saying is, if you keep Zach Davidson, he's probably on the field on some passing situations, especially in 12 personnel.
What's his story?
I think guys like that have... Go ahead.
For Bills fans...
Zach Davidson was... He was an undrafted free agent I believe undrafted, Minnesota Vikings a couple years ago. He was waived. The Bills claimed him. They put him on the practice squad. 2 years ago, he's on the Bills practice squad. If you remember, his biggest contribution, and I say it in a funny way, but it's true, his biggest contribution to Bills uniform was being on the sidelines in street clothes when Quay Walker pushed him during a game and got ejected. Do you remember that?
Okay.
During the night game, the Packers, when they came here. And it was like, man, he pushed a guy who's on the practice squad standing on the field like it wasn't even involved in the play. And then last year, even before minicamp, he tore his ACL. He was put on injured reserve the whole season. He was just on IR all year, and now he's worked his way back. And I'm telling you guys, he makes plays every day out here at camp.
And he's 6'7", 250. Like,
he also,
huge.
Quick search, though, he used to punt.
Oh, here we go.
Yes, yes. He was a punter. That is correct. He's an athlete.
Double threat.
I know. And we saw the punting battle, quote-unquote, ended last week. I say it didn't. It doesn't mean Sam Martin's on this team for sure, but right now Sam Martin's the only punter. We'll see where they go from here. Who has the most to lose? That's a good question. I'd have to go through and see. Like, it would have to be...
I've got a name for you if I could.
You give me one.
Two names. I mean, the receiver room is always one to keep an eye on. MBS had a couple of drops from some highlights I've seen. But Claypool is just not a factor, right? He's been hurt, and it basically is not even really having a camp.
He's the guy I would go to, Jeremy. I agree with you. He's the name that came to mind, but I would say for a different reason. Like, he's got to start playing soon. He's got the most to lose. If he's not back on the field and showing what he can do, like, what is going on? What do you do with him? So I think for sure that, you know, he's a guy that would have, you know, some to lose here. You look at the running back battle we were just talking about. Ray Davis. Well, I mean, Ray Davis is going to be, to me, their number two back, but... Like, if he goes and puts the ball on the ground twice on Saturday, like, this is not helping his cause, and he's done that a little bit this camp.
On defense, one more name here. You know, this guy's probably on the team, but Kyer Elam kind of platooning in with Rasul Douglas at practice? Or, I mean, Elam is climbing the ladder here, Sal. Like, in terms of most to gain, I'm not sure if he really needs the preseason to climb the ladder any further, but, you know, we're beyond, hey, he looks kind of good, into he really is pushing for a starting job.
Yeah, so I wonder how much he's actually like pushing for it, or is it's the perception of pushing for it. And what I mean by that is, I still think it would take a lot for Benford not to be the starter and Elam to be the starter, or Rasul Douglas. When you say, by the way, platooning, they're all platooning, they're all moving.
That's right. That's right. There's a lot of reps.
That's right. So, what would it take for Kyer Elam to actually start over one of them? I think it would take one of the two to really look kind of real disastrous a bit, and Kyer to really look good. And the only reason is because of trust, right? Kyer is there, guys. He's right there, you know, knocking on the door to show that he can be a contributor. He can be a role player. I don't know if he's truly pushing for a starting job, or they keep, like, the more that he does this, you keep him out there. His confidence, it's a big deal with him, the confidence and the energy and the praise he's getting. I'm not saying it's fake. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying, though, is you keep doing that with him because it's helping him. But I don't really know if that gap is as close as it is internally to take over Christian Benford, who, by the way, had a really nice practice yesterday. And I think this is helping Christian Benford to have a guy on him, like, you know, like a Dane Jackson last year, right? A guy that, okay, like, I can't just rest here and say, like, this is my job. I got Kyer pushing me, and I think this is good for everybody.
I was just about to bring up, Sal, because, like, Jamarcus Ingram, we've mentioned too, like, me and Jeremy have noticed him. You've been on him for a while, you know, for the corner depth, you know. I'm thinking, like, what's the way I want to put this to you? Like, what are the odds someone's going to call you this week and ask about, is Elam playing so well that they can move Benford to safety? But it feels like you're in the middle of training camp, right? Like, it might be too late for that. So, like, if this were Madden, like, oh, if you think Benford could play safety given their injuries and Elam's playing so well at corner, like, go ahead and do it. But once you're into the middle of training camp, you know, I feel like that question's probably not a realistic one.
Yeah, and listen, Christian Benford's a cornerback on the Buffalo Bills. He's been a cornerback. I know that he has some safety flexibility. In a real, real tight pinch, they could do it. They're not doing that. Christian Benford is a legitimate starting cornerback in the NFL. The Bills aren't moving him to safety. And even if Kyer Elam plays really well, you know, you still that's great. That's great for everybody. Then you have another good corner out there. And I agree, Jamarcus Ingram's had a good camp. You guys know how much I've talked about him the last couple of years. Also remember, Jamarcus Ingram has some safety flexibility.
Yep.
We haven't necessarily seen it in the NFL, but he can do that. He has a skill set to be able to play safety. And don't forget, Cam Lewis is on this team, right? So they have guys who can, you know, do different things. This is a nice, it's a nice kind of problem to have when a couple of your corners are starting to kind of rise up. And maybe it's just showing that Brandon Bean and not going out and getting somebody, maybe he's being rewarded with this faith in these guys, right? And hey, here's Kaiir, here's Jamarcus Ingram. But I still got to see it a little bit more in games. I got to see it's nice to do it out here, but what's going to happen when you get those, when you get, you know, guys on the other team fighting for spots? Scott, when Roma Dunze lines up and Kaiir Elam's covering him, show me what that looks like. So yeah, I think that that's this. The next few weeks are big for Kaiir.
Thank you, Sal. Enjoy camp today. We'll see you on Wednesday out there.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
Sal Capaccio is covering training camp today. It's not open to the public. Three more practices from Fisher today, Wednesday, and Thursday. When we return, it was Hall of Fame weekend. We said the Hall of Fame game, the enshrinement ceremonies. Next year's first-time eligibles include one guy. I hope you're ready for the take-pocalypse.
I am ready.
It's going to go next year. We'll get you the first-time eligible Hall of Famers next. All right. Quick segment. Eli Manning is one of the first year eligibles for next year's Hall of Fame.
I don't think you understand how ready I am for this fight.
It's great.
In the
I don't think you're ready for how ready I am for the fight, because I just arrived at this weekend that he is indeed a Hall of Famer. I have one very specific way to say yes, he is. Terrell Suggs, Marshawn Lynch, Earl Thomas, Aqib Talib, Adam Vinatieri, Luke Kuechly, first time eligible. We also got to get you the story. Dwight Freeney. If you missed Dwight Freeney's speech, early in the speech, he told a story about being teammates with Edgerrin James. He thanked Edgerrin James and then went on to say that as roommates, Edgerrin James did something with the hotel room that they stayed in. And the question is, could you handle that? Could you handle your roommate doing this? I'll tell you what that is next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole with its V-shaped stud configuration is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.